Hi, I'm Paul Lisnick, and welcome to Behind the Curtain. And that is just one of the beautiful songs playing in Sunset Boulevard, music by Andrew Lloyd Webber. You'd recognize his sound almost anywhere, and you certainly get it in this show. Welcome, everybody, to this week's Behind the Curtain. We are talking with the cast and the musical director for Sunset Boulevard. It is currently playing at Porchlight Music Theater to huge crowds, incredible reviews. Not surprised. I gave it 4 stars in my review, and now I get to talk to the following people. Let me introduce them to you. First of all, playing the role of Norma Desmond as only she could. I have a feeling when they picked this show, there was no question who was going to have this role, and that is one of Chicago's very own Hollis Resnick. Hollis, thanks for being with me.
It's my pleasure. Thank you.
And playing the role of Joe Gillis is Billy Rude, also a well-known figure around the Chicago area. He's been at Porchlight before, and by the way, touring in as Jerry Lee Lewis and Million Dollar Quartet in that tour. So, Billy, welcome to you.
It's a pleasure to be here. Thanks for having me today.
Yeah, and Aaron Benham is the music director, just freshly off the national tour of Beautiful, the Carole King musical. And again, he too has done so much work here in the Chicago area and other places. Aaron, thanks for joining us.
Hello.
Okay, so let's have fun. Let's talk. Hollis, this is, like I said, I'm convinced that when Michael Webber, the artistic director, decided, I don't know this for a fact, but when he decided to do Sunset Boulevard, if I were casting it, I'd be like, this is Hollis Resnick. Was this a role you always wanted, you know, as who has to play this? Was this a role you've always wanted to do?
Honestly, I was supposed to do it several years ago at the Marriott Theater up in Northbrook or Buffalo Grove.
Lincolnshire, yeah.
Yeah, Lincolnshire, yes, thank you. And I ended up getting a national tour, and I dropped out. And I was very disappointed about it because we had already done a lot of press about it. And I thought, well, I'll never get the chance to do it again because it is such an iconic role. But this popped up, and I think that Michael has wanted to do Sunset for quite a while, and he asked me last year to just come in and sing through a little bit of the score and to see if I was interested, and I you know, he committed me rather early to the project, and I said, okay, well, here we go, I guess I'll do this, but it's all Michael's doing, definitely.
Yeah, well everything is, isn't it?
Yes.
Everything in life, I think, is Michael Webber is doing. Billy, also, obviously, a great role for you and a lot of fun to do this. So talk to me about the role. I'll tell you what, I'll put the burden on you to tell us a bit about what this show is all about and who the Joe Gillis role is and how it relates to Norma Desmond.
Yeah, sure. So if you remember from the original movie, this is the William Holden character, the writer who is kind of scorned and jaded by the fabric of Hollywood, which I think hasn't changed quite so much today. But he's tired. He's been in LA for long enough for himself to realize that the path to glory and fame isn't what he thought it was. It's not even a question of, is it hard work? Is it good work? It's kind of what he's realized. So he's a writer. He's at his wit's end when trying to make it in a way that has integrity for him artistically. And he owes a lot of money, and he stumbles across kind of a safe haven in Norma Desmond, coming across this amazing film star who's almost faded back into the annals of history. But this meeting kind of revitalizes both of them in a really beautiful way, and kind of a tragic way, obviously, as well. But Joe stays with Norma as a tool to protect himself, but he also kind of finds an an artistic companion in Norma, because Norma, much like him, really relishes in the purity of movies and the dreams that movies make come true. And I think the interesting thing about Joe is he's originally from Dayton, Ohio. So he's a lot like us. He's got a lot of Midwestern sensibilities. He wasn't raised in, you know, the viciousness that is Hollywood. He's not used to that, but he's had to become used to that. Yeah. And that desensitization or desensitizing of normal life is what really kind of bogs him down. But this companion he finds in Norma is just something he's never experienced before, and it's exactly what he needs, because Joe really is an opportunist. He's a bit skeezy, but he's only skeezy because he's learned what it takes to survive, and if this is something that he needs to survive, he's going to do it. I think Joe is a good representation of impulse control, or lack thereof, of our humans' ability to control their impulses.
But
in
Norma, he certainly found
your cake and eat it too.
Yeah, he's certainly found his match in Norma. House, I'm going to get back to you in a moment, but Aaron, let me talk to you about that. You know, this of course was a movie in 1950, classic film noir movie, one of the best of all times, it's been said. And this was something that Stephen Sondheim wanted to make a musical. We were all at the Arts Club, except for Billy and not on that panel, but we were at the Arts Club of Chicago a while back, where I got to interview Michael and Hollis and Aaron. We made you play the piano. And but anyway, we talked about the fact that back in the day, Sondheim wanted to write a musical of this, ran into Billy Wilder at a cocktail party, who said, no, this needs to be an opera. Fast forward, and Andrew Lloyd Webber steps in to create the music that we have. But don't you agree, Aaron, the music as it is now under Andrew Lloyd Webber, I almost wouldn't want to hear it any other way. I think it's magnificent.
I do, too. I remember I found this recording of it when I was in high school, and my little heart just exploded because I love the music so much. It's grand, you know. Norma is grand. That idea of old Hollywood is grand, and so why not have? Well, you could do the Opera House route, or you could do the Broadway opera, which, you know, like Andrew Lloyd Webber is the master of that. You know, he did a musical called Phantom of the Opera.
That's right.
So yeah, the music is big, and I mean, one of the pleasures of our production. So we're in a very small theater, I would say, but the way that the orchestra sounds and the choir, it sounds way bigger than it actually is. This show, I love that production, that the size of it. And I think we're achieving those levels that you might experience in a 1,000-seat Broadway house.
I agree with you. I mean, everything Porchlight does really has this very big effect, but here the use of projection, you know, film and creating that that noir effect, film noir, is really absolutely wonderful for me. Hollis, in all the reviews, and of course, like everybody else, I my review mentions you and Billy as doing such an incredible job. But one of the things I've also noticed in some of the reviews is that your take on Norma Desmond. Look, it's been played before by Gloria Swanson in the movie, Glenn Close on Broadway, others on Broadway and off Broadway. But some, and I think it may have been Chris Jones of the Tribune, who said he's never seen the kind of intensity and the take brought to this role that you brought to it, which has to mean, of course, aside from any other actress that played this role, it's your interpretation. But are you affected, in fact, by the environment you in? And by that, I mean the intimacy of the Porchlight. Does that help you?
My take on this is it is a small house. It's only 214 feet. But I have to say that my storytelling has to be complete, whether it's 1,000 seats or whether it's 214. And I am constantly bolstered by the people I play opposite with, like Billy, like singing with Aaron's orchestrations and piano playing. I just have to concentrate on telling the story that I find in her that is the truest. So I'm not concerned about, honestly, I don't concern myself too much with reviews or the size of houses. I really just have to tell the story of who I think this woman is. So I'm very grateful for all the positivity, and I would really like to say that working with Billy has been a joy. He's a young actor, but he's like a sponge. He takes everything in and just goes for it. And, of course, I've worked with Aaron many times, and he's a true pro. And it's just a joy. It really is a joy. So I hope that answers your question.
It does. But I'm also still recovering from Aaron's comment that he was in high school when the cast recording came out, because I thought I saw it on Broadway, and you probably did, and Aaron was in high school. So, Aaron, I'm depressed. But anyway.
I had good taste even in high school.
Right. Well, yeah.
Yes, he did.
Yeah, he did. Okay. Yeah. And, of course, Billy probably wasn't born. I don't know. But, Billy, let me also, you know, kudos to you as well for the relationship we also see. I love Michelle Lauto, who plays Betty and your other, you know, counterpart of the show. But let me go back to the character of Joe again, because, look, I'm not ruining anything here, but we do get sort of at least some kind of romantic relationship that happens with Norma, but we know his heart is also with Betty, and the world couldn't be more different than Betty versus Norma. Is that about Joe being an opportunist, or does something real, do you believe, you're him, you're Joe, happen with Norma?
Yeah, of course. I think there's a lot. There are a lot of real things that happen between Joe and Norma. I think there's a sympathy that Joe has for someone that the environment that he also is from has cast away. A big part of the show is about Norma not being able to make the transition from silent film to talkies. And as Joe sits and gets to know Norma in her palazzo more and more, there's a huge sympathy that he develops of understanding. And as the show also goes on, you learn more about Max's character, played by the unbelievable Larry Adams.
Oh, he's incredible.
You find out these very film noir bits of information that if you're following Joe, you know, you're also following his track with Norma, and hopefully you get to understand the things that he sympathizes with in Norma, and the ways in which he loves her are very different than the ways in which he loves Betty, but they're important to him just the same.
Yeah, and so that's a good take on it. Aaron, there's a couple of songs in the show. I mean, you know, everything is fairly well known in the show, but for those who are just, say, Broadway fans, but maybe not into everything, songs like With One Look, which we opened this show with, and As If We Never Said Goodbye, there are some songs that have just, and Weber is always classic for writing songs that will have a life of their own outside the show. Directing the musical, when you get to those numbers that you know everyone's going to know, does that matter to you? Or do you say, okay, this is that moment people are waiting for? Or do you say, no, look, it's originally part of this story. This is where it goes, and this is where it goes.
Yeah, I would say that it's a part of the scene. And the great thing about having Hollis and Billy is that they treat these songs like scenes. They don't, you know, they don't break and perform a number. It flows from what came before it, and it flows into what comes after it.
That's a great point.
This show of ours has a great flow, and you know it has its moments. You know, With One Look is definitely a showstopper, but it's not gonna. It won't break you from the reality that we've created on the stage.
Hollis, some of the songs, I mean, I think As If We Never Said Goodbye, I mean, I'm not the musical artist that Aaron is, but I know music somewhat. That strikes me as a very difficult number to do. There's so many different things going on in that number. What is your thought now in terms of the challenges that you face when you take on numbers like that?
Well, they are very difficult. You know, there are those musical theater arias that everybody wants to hear. But I always stick with in the moment who I am right now, what do I want to say, and I have taken a few liberties in terms of timing with that song, and of course Aaron has been so willing to go along with me, because the acting to me is everyone can sing, everyone has beautiful voices, but you have to say how this person is feeling at this moment. So I'm extremely grateful to everyone in the play and Aaron for allowing me to do that, to explore that. And I continue to explore it. It's never the same. I mean, theater is live. It crackles. So there's always room to find more meaning in the text and the melodies. But yes, it's not an easy song to sing. Technically, not an easy song for me to sing. But, you know, you just practice. That's what you do.
Yeah.
You sing every day. You just, whoever plays Hamilton downtown practices every day. Okay? That's what you do. That's just what you do.
Yeah. And for me, even though I'm not in the show, I do have different numbers like Sunset Boulevard that are in my head all the time. I have to tell you that, Billy, that for whatever reason, the Sunset Boulevard number sticks in my head. I find myself singing it around the house. So I am your understudy for the show, just so you know that. And although I'm not sure I would do the, I'm not sure I can do the pool scene. I don't think I could pull that off as you do. So that could be a difference between us.
But isn't he a handsome fella?
Yeah, he is. Yes. Yeah, that's right. I guess if anything, people go see Billy in his bathing suit when you're there, right?
I'm so lucky to have him as my leading man. I'm so lucky.
I'm lucky to be with you, Hollis.
Well, I'm gonna follow.
You have to kiss your grandmother. That always kind of like.
Oh, hi.
Okay, there's an image a lot of people aren't really thinking about right now that we might put out of our head.
I know, but I always think of that. I think, oh my goodness gracious! But that's the story.
The
story.
And you're actors.
So you have to tell the story.
Right. You would kiss your great grandmother if you had to, right, Billy? You do what you got to do.
Oh, of course. You do what you got to do to live in a palazzo, you know?
Yeah, so as I'm listening to this, Billy, one of the things that I'm reacting to is I'm listening to just the sort of the depth of history you get as Hollis talks and her experience and Aaron. And it's already been mentioned, you're, you know, on the younger end of performance. When you do a show like this, and you've already done so many, but is there an extra level of digging in for you? And what I mean by that is there are some shows that you can do where you say, okay, we're kind of all in this together. But here you get the opportunity to work with kind of a, I'm going to say the phrase Chicago legend. I don't mean to age you with that, but Chicago legend like Hollis. Do you sort of say to yourself, no, I have something I have to learn in this experience as well?
I mean, every experience is a situation in which I say there's something to be learned here. I think anyone that doesn't go in with that kind of open mindset is closing a door to something incredibly important in their career, first of all. But there was so much to glean from working with everyone on stage, but there's also so much to glean from how the show is structured and, you know, vocally what's to be demanded of the actors in the show. So I had to do a lot of work on my own that was important to me as far as being a good storyteller, because I have to take these people on this journey, and I have to show them the world of Norma Desmond and this illustrious life. And I also have to be a bit of a heel. So there was a lot that went into, absorbing how I function in the grand scheme of things with Hollis. How is my demeanor different with Larry Adams? How does it change with Michelle? Is it all still the same Joe Gillis? There's many levels of duplicity and obvious deceitfulness to Joe. But at its core, he's swimming, and he's really just swimming to keep his head above the water, because he's been drowning for so long. And this is the first time that someone's thrown him a raft. And kind of the big struggle is, did he deserve to have the raft thrown to him?
Hmm.
And that's one of the big questions I always have to think about. And Sunset Boulevard, the song itself, is kind of that, you know what, it doesn't matter if I deserved to have the raft thrown to me. I got the raft, and it's mine now.
Yeah, how very Hollywood. What a great point.
I know. That's something Michael really wanted us to focus on, too, is like, What are the real life things that these people would be saying to themselves?
I think about that, Hollis, as well. I know that this was in Michael's director notes, but the notion that, of course, back when the film was made in around 1950, there's that great Hollywood Land sign. But as time went on, or actually before that, but then it gets taken down and gets replaced by Hollywood. And just he says that's kind of a metaphor for a changing Hollywood. I'm sort of curious. So, yes, the change from the world of Norma Desmond as she moves into the later talkie pictures, but I'm just looking at it from today. And again, Hollis, you've done so many different shows. What are we in a different world today in terms of performance and actors in Broadway than we were even with what Norma Desmond had to go through? Does that question make any sense?
Oh, I think so. I mean, actors just want to work. You see a lot of people that are that were in films that are on TV, people that were in TV that now want to do shows on Broadway because, you know, artists, they just want to work. They just want to tell good stories.
Yeah.
That's what I've always wanted to do, just tell a really good story and to work with really good, honest people. And, Norma is tragic, but it was tragic for a lot of people of her time. It's tragic for a lot of women of our time, maybe not Meryl Streep, but, you know, it can be a bit tragic because the roles for females, of course, are less than. I've played a lot of men on stage, which is fun. The only thing constant in life is change.
Mm-hmm.
And it's always going to be like mm-hmm. that. And I'm very accepting of our artistic culture at this point right now. Things could be better, but, you know, I have to keep striving that, you know, the arts are a necessity. They are not a luxury. They are a necessity. And that's sort mm-hmm. of what I live by. So I hope that answers your question.
It does. I think we'd all agree. And we're going to watch it certainly as Billy's career proceeds. And Aaron, let me just ask you, as Hollis says, she sort of goes with the moment and she's performing. Every night, is the show, once it opens, of course, it's locked, but is the orchestra able to play to some maybe different take that Hollis might take or Billy might take at a certain moment in a certain performance?
Well, Aaron certainly does. I have to jump in for a second. Aaron and I have worked together on and off over several years, and he has a great sensitivity to what I need, and if I ask him for a little bit of something, I always get it from Aaron, and he is to be congratulated for totally, you know, supporting the artist, not only his artistry in the pit, but my storytelling as the actor. So you go ahead, Aaron, but I just wanted to say that.
Aaron, you may agree or disagree at this point.
I completely agree. You know, it's a real privilege to work with Billy and Hollis because they're musicians first, I think. And, you know, when they come to a musical, they have to bring their musical skills. And it's really easy for my musicians in the orchestra to get on the same page with them. And so they move with them, you know, now that they've rehearsed the music. And this is not easy music, I must say. It's a handful, and I'm very tired by the end of every show. But it's, they've become a part of the cast, a part of the team. And
yeah. Yeah.
So, yeah.
And
yeah.
Nothing is ever locked in stone because storytelling is a living, breathing thing. You know, you can be on a national tour for 2 years and all of a sudden it's mechanical. But our situation with Sunset Boulevard right now, that is not the case. It is a process. It continues to be a process. And I'm proud to be a part of that process with both of these wonderful gentlemen. And, I'm just grateful I had the opportunity. I never thought I would. And here I am doing Norma Desmond. Well, I guess.
It's an amazing experience for the audience. I can tell you that. I would also say, of course, we recently just had the Jeff Award. So those were done. But I don't know when the award night is next year. But I would kind of keep your calendars clear for all three of
goodness.
You.
I've won way too many awards.
Well, then I'll accept it for you. Billy and I will go up and accept it for you, Hollis, if you're okay with that.
Well, Billy, I hope
gladly.
Billy and Aaron
dress up as Salome.
I have won way too many awards. Honestly, I've just been honored way too much.
Yeah, I can't say that for me. But I want to congratulate all of you, Hollis Resnick and Billy Rood, and then great musical direction by Aaron Benham. And, of course, give our best to a frequent guest on the show, Michael Weber, who couldn't be with us today. But I want to go out playing the song that I can't get out of my head, because why not? I might as well close with it. And that is Sunset Boulevard. It is playing at Porchlight Music Theater, which is in the Ruth Page Center. If you haven't been there and haven't seen a show there, you just don't know what you're missing. It's playing through December 8th. Tickets at porchlightmusictheater.org. Theater is spelled the correct British way, T-R-E. Porchlight Music MusicTheater.org through December 8th. You just don't want to miss this show. This is one that's going to get going to be remembered as one of the great shows of this year's performances in Chicago. Here's a little bit of Billy Rude singing Sunset Boulevard.
Thank you, Paul.
Sunset Boulevard, Lethal Boulevard, everyone's forgotten how they started here on Sunset Boulevard.
And now I want to take you to a smaller theater company. You know, we always emphasize the big Broadway houses downtown and the larger theaters in town, like Looking Glass and Steppenwolf and Goodman and Victory Garden. And they're all great theaters. But there are smaller theater companies that we should be paying some attention to. And there's one that's been around only a couple of years. It's called the Imposter Theater. And they are located in Wicker Park, 1579 North Milwaukee Avenue in Wicker Park. What a great space. A lot of young people, vibrant areas, so much to do there. So I wanted you to meet the folks who are responsible for carrying on the programs of the Great Imposter Theater. And joining me now is the artistic director of the Imposters Theater Company, Stefan Rosin, and the executive director, Rachel Borgo. And folks, welcome to Behind the Curtain. Appreciate your time.
Thank you so much. We appreciate being here.
So I'll start with you, Rachel. Talk to me about what the mission of the Imposters Theater Company is. What makes you different, given all the theater choices around?
Absolutely. So the Imposters are interested in utilizing multiple skills rather than just one specialty. So a lot of us go to school for theater and we only go to school for acting, or we only go to school for design or lighting or whatever it is. All of us, we were lucky enough to have an education that was very well-rounded. And so we get to wear a lot of masks around each other, and we have a trust between each other. And I think Stefan could expand more on it, actually, being the artistic director.
Yeah, pick up on that, especially since she said we have a lot of masks, which is sort of an interesting way to put it.
Yes, yeah. As theater artists, obviously, we have a lot of interest. I think artists in general, their scope is broader than what they typically get pigeonholed into. And I think something as collaborative as theater is and can be, that's something that we definitely wanted to hone in on. So that also goes into the types of stories that we do. Our mission is to embrace the art of pretend and to stage stories at the crossroads of retrospect and innovation where the wide-eyed meet the world weary.
Okay, you read that.
We haven't memorized.
I know. I can say I'm going to memorize that myself. But so, Stefan, talk to me about, because some would argue, Stefan, well, all of theater is pretend.
True. It is true. I think a lot of times, though, people's perspective of theater is that they are going to go see something that is a slice of reality. And I'm not saying that we don't do shows that do have realistic or realism within them, but something that we want to really embrace is the connection that you have when you're a child and you hear a story. You know, you approach things with this kind of inhibition to imagine things out in front of you, to really expand your mind. But something that we don't want to ignore, too, is as we get older, we do have perspectives that shift and change. And we want to marry the two, where we don't want to approach theater in a childish manner, but with a childlike perspective.
Hmm. Very cool. Rachel, if I have this right, this is only your second season, right? You're a relatively new theater company.
Correct. We were incorporated about 3 years ago. This is our second season of production. We just opened with our current show, Tippy, Stories from the River. And we have another show coming up in 2020, Summer and Smoke by Tennessee Williams. And we're ending the season with an anthology series that we did last year as well called Footholds.
Yeah, and let's talk a little bit about those, and I'll kind of go back and forth with you. Stefan, let me come to you to talk about the show that is playing right now. It involves a fisherman, right, who's traveling up and down the Tipper Canoe, and he's looking for his love. Tell me about that show, because it's playing through November 2nd, so people have some time to see it.
Correct, yeah. So the show is a semi-autobiographical production, and it follows, the center story follows a family at their summer cabin in Indiana, off the Tippecanoe River. The two children in the family, Ella and Terrence, are very captivated by their uncle's story and tall tales that he weaves to entertain them. And as time goes on and as the children grow older, their perspectives on these stories start to shift and change. And one story in particular, the Tippy story, which is in the title, follows exactly what you were saying. A fisherman rolls up and down the Tippecanoe River looking for his wife who got swept overboard. And then the story itself, it's the spirit of Tippy haunts all these other stories and all these other perspectives as this family is thinking back on those times at the cabin. And so it's a funny play, and it also has a lot of serious dramatic moments, and it kind of gets a little absurd at times too. But yeah, it's a great show.
And then starting next year, actually, not till March, but we get Summer in Smoke, Rachel, which kind of balances the spiritual and the earthly. Elma and John, tell me about that.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a classic Tennessee Williams play that not a lot of theaters have been doing. It's one of his more underrated productions. It's a story of ships in the night, pretty much. These two people who should balance each other out and should be a wonderful couple together, Alma and John, but their paths never seem to quite align in a way that makes the relationship work. It's a really wonderful story that puts anxiety as like a mental illness on stage in a way that is recognizable and relatable, and how that affects a person's life and relationships moving forward.
And Stefan, the Foothold's 2020, and as you said, it's something you did last year, so this is kind of this, it's described as a community collaborative, this time going to be addressing the blank page, so I imagine it's about struggling writers.
Correct. So Foothold's, it's a little bit hard to explain, but the best way that we've learned how to describe it is that it is an anthology series. So what we are giving new playwrights is a prompt, a singular prompt, and it's a singular item. This year's item is a large glass jar half filled with earth, and writers can interpret that however they want. They just have to incorporate it within their script. So we're looking for 5 to 10 minute plays that incorporate this prompt, and through our blind judging, we select about 5 of those plays and then weave them together into a full production. What's really interesting is that last year's prompt, which was a large stack of red construction paper, through the submissions we got, really told the story starting from up in the heavens into the stars and then ending down in hell. And so we're really interested in how this prompt is weaved together by a bunch of different minds and really puts the focus on the community and working with new playwrights and working with new directors and, of course, new actors.
Yeah, and because as I looked at your website, I mean, there's an invitation for people to submit scripts, so you're looking for new works. And the space itself is a black box space, so you're giving yourselves some freedom to kind of go in whatever direction you need to go from production to production. Rachel.
Correct.
Yeah, absolutely. We've been lucky to have created a home for ourselves at Collaboration Studios, which is actually located in Wicker Park. We have been there for now just over a year, and it's within the historic Flatiron Arts building, which is just full of little artistic nooks and crannies, the black box that we have found.
And how many seats, Stefan, does the theater hold?
It can hold up to 60, but we keep our houses smaller. So right now our houses have been about 47.
Oh, that's really, so this is really an intimate experience.
It is.
And what's the address, the email or the website I know, but what's the address? Where's the theater located?
Sure. It's at 1579 North Milwaukee Avenue in Wicker Park. We're up on the 3rd floor. It is elevator accessible. The building itself is somewhat of a maze, but there's a lot of signage to help you get where you're going.
Yeah, I said up front to kind of check theaters out. It's kind of leaving the downtown area, and you guys aren't terribly outside. Actually, aren't you kind of near the Den Theater? Is that around where you are?
Mm-hmm. Yep, that's not too far.
Yeah.
It's at least a couple miles. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's why I've been trying to get suburbanites to come in and even people in the city to get out to this area to see. I mean, parking, I'm assuming parking for you guys is on the street as it is for Den, so it can be a little tricky.
Correct. It is on the street. We are always willing and available to help people find parking, though. We make sure that that's clear in all of our marketing materials, because we do have a crowd that comes from the suburbs, and it's definitely all street parking. There are a couple parking garages in the area, but we encourage people to come early or stay later after the show if they're coming to a matinee, because Wicker Park is just so full of life. There are so many places to go to eat, so many shops to just peruse. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah. Stefan, since this theater company has only been around for a couple of years, what were you doing before this?
Well, I actually did a lot of set design before really getting involved with the company itself, and just working with other smaller theater companies within the city. But yeah, before that, it was a lot of the theater company, as to be expected, was a lot of prep work. And since we were doing a lot of original shows too, a lot of our focus was on that and how to identify ourselves and the types of stories we wanted to do. We were very careful with how we wanted to be perceived and what we thought was needed within the Chicago community.
And Rachel, what were you doing before this?
I was in college, believe it or not.
Oh my God, I feel so old.
Oh, don't. Please don't. I was studying theater and creative writing at Valparaiso University, the same college that Stefan, in fact, went to as well. And I dabbled in a little bit of everything, from directing to set design to stage management. It was really a very wholesome experience at Valpo.
So, Stefan, I've been involved with many theater companies through the years, some since the inception. And so, as you know, and as I can affirm, it is not an easy task to create and give life to a theater company and keep it sustained, because I think people don't understand that they think they buy a ticket to a show and they're sustaining the theater company. But even the biggest of the theater companies, Goodman, Looking Glass, Steppenwolf, they don't survive on ticket sales alone. So assuming that is also true for you, talked about the importance of folks supporting you through donation and through other efforts.
Yes, absolutely. We wouldn't be where we are if it wasn't for our donors and the people that believe in us and the stories that we're telling. And we're very appreciative with the type of feedback and the support that we've gotten so far. Yes, ticket sales really do only cover a very, very small percentage of what goes into a production. So for us, we always try to be as transparent as we can be with our donors, to show all the work that goes into it, and to really put the focus on the importance that we need donations outside of the productions themselves. But yeah, we have a lot of really, really hardworking individuals and artists that we've been, blessed to bring on board with our company. And I think that hard work shows through to the people who support us.
Yeah. In fact, Rachel, I'll tell you, the way I became familiar with you through a couple of friends of mine who attended one of the performances and were blown away by it and contacted me and said, you need to check out Imposters Theater Company. So that's why I wanted to do that as well. I'm glad I did. And so for you, Rachel, when for actors in the city, whatever, talk about auditions? You're a non-equity house, I assume?
Yeah, we are non-equity. We host auditions 3 times a year because we have 3 shows. Mm-hmm. And everyone is welcome from all backgrounds, racial, sexual orientation, gender identity. It doesn't matter to us. Differently abled as well. We want to work with as many different artists as possible in the city. And the city is so rife with different kinds of people. And we are well aware that we've only just scratched the surface.
So what you're saying is there's a role for me somewhere.
Absolutely, Paul. Let's see you at audition.
I'm still after playing Tevye and Fiddler. I'm not sure if that's on your roster.
Not yet.
It's certainly on mine. Well, the Imposter Theater Company, the website you can check them out is Imposter Theater Company with theater, spelled the correct way, T-R-E, the English version. It is. I'm so annoyed when people spell theater with a T-E-R. I don't know what it is.
Thank you.
Yeah. Let's do it the right way like the British guy. Do you guys have intermissions or intervals?
Intermissions during the show, you're asking?
No. Well, yes, but do you have an intermission or do you call it interval? If we're going to go British, we got to go British all the way.
Oh,
it's an intermission. Well, I guess we have to change something then. Geez.
Yeah. Well, you're not alone. I can't. Nobody else is calling it interval. I have to go to England. And I love saying interval to people because they look at me like I'm strange. I'm going, well, if you went to theater in England, you would understand. But anyway, so I hope everybody will check it out. And Imposter Theater Company is at 1579 North Milwaukee in Wicker Park. Man, you're just surrounded by, you couldn't be in a better location in terms of reaching mm-hmm. young people and folks who are really into that scene. And so I wish you well in the upcoming season, encourage people to support you. And the current show, Tippy Stories from the River, playing now through November 2nd. New shows coming up in the new year. Stephan Rossin, Rachel Borgo, thank you for your time and sharing a bit about the theater company with us. We'll hope everybody checks it out. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Paul.
Thank you.
Right. Well, if you want to know more about what we've talked about here, follow me on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, at Paul Lisnek. That's PaulLisnek. And I'd love to hear your comments or topic suggestions for future podcasts. You can also go to my website, paullisnek.tv. And hey, don't forget to hit subscribe on WGN Plus and iTunes and tune in each week to hear more insider scoop coming to you from behind the curtain.